ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
हरे कृष्ण। वी वेलकम एवरीवन टू द मॉर्निंग भागवतम क्लास। वी आर डिस्कसिंग फ्रॉम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 5 एंटाइटल्ड नारदस टीचिंग्स टू वसुदेव एंड टेक्स्ट नंबर 6 फॉर डिस्कशन टुडे। कर्मण्य कोविदा स्तब्धा मूर्खा पंडितमानिनः वदन्ति चाटुकान् मूढ़ा यया माध्व्या गिरोत्सुका। कर्मण्य कोविदा स्तब्धा मूर्खा पंडितमानिनः वदन्ति चाटुकान् मूढ़ा यया माध्व्या गिरोत्सुका। कर्मण्य कोविदः स्तब्धा मूर्खः पंडितमानिनः वदन्ति चाटुकान् मूढ़ा यया माध्व्या गिरोत्सुका। वदन्ति चाटुकान् मूढ़ा यया माध्व्या गिरोत्सुका। कर्मण्य कोविदा स्तब्धा पंडितमानिना यया माध्व्या गिरोत्सुका। माताजी यया माध्व्या गिरोत्सुका। कर्मण्य कोविदः स्तब्धा मूर्खः पंडितमानिनः वदन्ति चाटुकान् मूढ़ा मणिय कोविद खा पंडित मानिनः दंती चाटुका मूढ़ा यया माध्व्या गिरोत्सुका। विल रीड द वर्ड टू वर्ड ट्रांसलेशन। Word to word translation, translation and purport by the humble disciples of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Karmani, about the facts of fruitive work, about the facts of fruitive work. A kovida, ignorant. Stabdaha, puffed up by false pride. मूर्खः फूल्स पंडितमानिनः थिंकिंग देमसेल्व्स ग्रेट स्कॉलर्स वदन्ति दे स्पीक चाटुकान flattering entities. Moodaha, bewildered. Yaya, by which. Madhvya, sweet. Gira, words. Utsukaha, very eager. Translation. Ignorant of the art of work, such arrogantly proud fools, enchanted and enlivened by the sweet words of the Vedas, pose as learned authorities and offer flattering entreaties to the demigods. Purport. The words karmani akovidaha refer to those who are ignorant of the art of performing work in such a way that there will be no future bondage. This art is described in Bhagavad Gita. Yajnyarthat karmano annatra lokoyam karma bandhanah. Work must be performed for the satisfaction of Vishnu. Otherwise, work is the cause of future bondage in the cycle of repeated birth and death. The word stabdha, puffed up by false pride, indicates that although ignorant persons do not know the art of working properly, they do not inquire from learned devotees, nor do they accept the advice of the Lord's own men. Being infatuated by the fruitive results offered in the Vedas, such murkhas or fools think, quote, "We are learned Vedic scholars. We have understood everything perfectly," unquote. Thus they are attracted to such Vedic statements as apamasopam, apamasomam, amrita abhuma, which means we have drunk the soma juice and now we are immortal. Akshayam havai chaturmasya yajinaha sukritam bhavati, which means for one who executes the chaturmasya sacrifice, there is inexhaustible pious reaction. And yatra noshnam na shitam syanna glanir napi aratayaha, which means let us go to that material planet where there is no heat, no cold, no diminution and no enemies. Such foolish persons are unaware that even Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe, will die at the end of universal time. What to speak of materialistic followers of the Vedas who jump like frogs to the different celestial planets, seeking the highest standard of sense gratification. Such bewildered Vedic scholars dream of frolicking with the apsaras, the gorgeous society girls of the heavenly planets who are expert in singing, dancing and in general stimulating uncontrollable lusty desires. Thus, those who are carried away by the heavenly phantasmagoria offered in the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas gradually develop an atheistic mentality. Actually, the entire universe is meant to be offered to Lord Vishnu as a sacrifice. The conditioned soul can thereby gradually elevate himself to the eternal kingdom beyond the hallucination of material sense gratification. However, being puffed up by false pride, the materialistic followers of the Vedas remain perpetually ignorant of the supremacy and the beauty of Lord Vishnu. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupah Kadamahiyam Dadati Swapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha
కృష్ణ పాదాన్ సహగణ లలిత శ్రీ విశాఖాన్వితాంశ్చ హే కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధో దీనబంధో జగత్పతే గోపేశ గోపికాకాంత రాధాకాంత నమోస్తుతే తప్త కాంచన గౌరాంగీ రాధే వృందావనేశ్వరి వృషభాను సుతే దేవి ప్రణమామి హరి ప్రియే వాంఛాకల్పతరుభ్యశ్చ కృపాసింధూభ్యైవ చ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః. నమో విష్ణుపాదాయ కృష్ణపృష్ఠాయ భూతలే శ్రీమదే భక్తివేదాంత స్వామీనితి నామినే. నమస్తే సరస్వతే దేవే గౌరవాణీ ప్రచారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాదీ పాశ్చాత్యదేశతారిణే. జయ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధర్ శ్రీవాసది గౌరభక్తవృంద. హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే.
హరే కృష్ణ. ఐ సీక్ ద బ్లెస్సింగ్స్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ ద డివోటీస్ బిఫోర్ వీ కెన్ స్పీక్ సంథింగ్ ఆన్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం. So today's shloka is discussing about people who are caught up in Vedic rituals, and in one sense they are scholars. Purport says, although there are learned Vedic scholars who feel we have understood everything perfectly, so usually the purpose of knowledge is to take people from ignorance to a state of enlightenment. But in today's shloka we are discussing about knowledge that has not taken people from ignorance to enlightenment. It has taken them from one level of ignorance to another level of ignorance. After everything that they learned, actually they got pride, which is blocking their advancement. Somebody who is driving a car, accelerator is good for him. Somebody who is driving at 20 kilometers per hour, if he presses on the accelerator, he goes to 40 kilometers per hour. Somebody who is driving at 40 kilometers per hour, he continues to put his foot on the accelerator, he goes to 60 kilometers per hour. So on till 80, 100, very good. His speed is increasing, he is going faster and faster towards the destination. But after a certain point of time, that same accelerator which was helping him go ahead will act like a brake. How? Because after 100, when he again presses it, it goes to 120. This is the time to stop. After 120, after 140, instead of going faster, you might put a brake on your car, as in it might meet an accident. So we should know when to use the accelerator and when to release the accelerator. So after 120, after 140, accelerator is your enemy. And before 120, before 130, it was your friend. Similarly, intelligence, knowledge in general is your greatest asset. If we don't know what is the truth, if we don't understand what is the reality of this world, how will we deal with it? How will we come out of it? That's why Ishopanishad mentions we should know Gyan and Agyan both. But in some cases, which is what usually Srimad Bhagavatam deals with, is Srimad Bhagavatam is dealing with some specific cases and it highlights those fine points. So knowledge is always helpful, except for those who, when they get knowledge, take it as some kind of an earning that they did, rather than seeing it as a gift of those who gave it. So many times, although the 20 items of knowledge Krishna speaks in the Gita, 13.8 to 13.12, it begins with a manitvam, a dambhitvam, ahimsa kshanti rajo. It begins with humility And again Krishna gives another flavor to humility, calling it pridelessness. That's how Krishna says is knowledge. Out of 20 items of knowledge, 2 are roughly similar, and that too humility. And then at the end Krishna says, apart from these 20 items of knowledge, whatever exists is agyan, is actually not knowledge, it appears like knowledge. So we hear it, we are emphasized repeatedly how knowledge means humility, how knowledge can never mean pride. But all of us are testimony to the fact that we ourselves become greatest victims of the pride that especially comes from knowledge. Just see how I have left my previous state of ignorance behind. Yes? This is what makes me proud. So, first, there is darkness, which is, I can't see anything. Then there is light, which empowers me to see the world. But that same light, when it comes too close to my eyes, again it leads to blindness. Again I cannot see. If I stand far away from the mirror, I can't see. I go close to the mirror, I can see myself properly. If I go still closer to the mirror, I again cannot see myself. So actually, knowledge should not lead to pride, but somehow it leads to pride. Only when we forget the person who gave us the knowledge, the source of all knowledge. As long as I focus on how I have received knowledge and how I have left behind my ignorance, till that time I may think, I am the person who's driving it all. No, I'm not driving it all. Somehow, it's my mercy. I happened to be at the right place, at the right time, when the right person was speaking the right knowledge. It is my good fortune. It's not that I earned any of this. Any person who's fed, a child is fed by the mother. Imagine if the child becomes proud. Just see how at one point of time I was a tiny kid. I did not have much strength in my arms. I did not have a strong body. Just see now how I am a strong youth. Yes, you are a strong youth. Curtsy whom? Curtsy your mother, who fed you nutritious dishes. So anybody who is a good devotee, how can he take the credit on himself, saying, just see how nice a devotee I am, how advanced devotee I am. You are just completely neglecting the people who gave it to you. There are teachers who gave it to you. There are teachers who inspired you to accept what was given. There were teachers who were clearing away your obstacles when you were trying to apply by inspiration what you received from others. So from your first day to the last day, how can we deny our dependence? But only those who neglect these essential facts, they can become proud. In Bhagavad Gita 4th chapter, transcendental knowledge is compared to a boat. Api chetasi papebhya sarvebhya papakrittamaha sarvam jnana plave naiva. Plava means a boat. So Krishna compares transcendental knowledge to a boat. Boat is used for transportation. You sit in a boat and go somewhere. Yes. So in the purport of this shloka, there is a very beautiful line that Prabhupada writes as the opening line of the purport. He says, when we speak of transcendental knowledge, I'll read it wherever it is. When we speak of transcendental knowledge, we do so in terms of spiritual understanding. Such a beautiful line. Knowledge is not for knowledge's sake, knowledge is for understanding's sake. So somebody who has a tremendous amount of knowledge but has no understanding is not knowledgeable. So, some of us have sat in that boat and the boat moves. So we have landed somewhere, but is that the place where we wanted to land? In my childhood I had seen a humorous movie. In that movie it was shown how there was one person who was jobless. He did not have any qualifications also, educational qualifications. But somewhere he hears that there is a place outside India, Dubai. So he says, in Dubai you can earn quick money even if you are not educated. So to every single friend of his, he's saying, do you know somebody in Dubai? I want to go to Dubai. But none of his friends are
superior to him. They are also like him. So none of them can help. So as he is talking to different people, do you know anybody in Dubai? Do you know anybody in Dubai? Some crook hears this conversation and he understands this person is desperate to go to Dubai. So he tells him, I'll take you to Dubai. Okay, what is needed? He says, 1 lakh rupees. He says, I don't have 1 lakh rupees. He said, okay, show me your educational qualifications. He says, I don't have any educational qualifications also. He says, you can't go to Dubai. So he says, no, you should help me to go to Dubai. He says, okay, you need to pay me before we leave. And because you don't have any educational qualifications, I can't take you by the standard air route. We need to go by boat. I'll take you secretly so that people, they don't check your educational qualification. So yes, done. That night, somewhere on some beach, there's a small boat. So he asked, how come this small boat? He said, see, we want to go there unnoticed. If we go in a big boat, we'll be caught. So yes, true. So he takes all the money, puts him in a boat and tells him, you go to sleep now, morning we'll reach. So morning, they reach some land. And this person wakes up and he says, we reached Dubai, we reached, get off. And as soon as this person gets off the boat, goes. Yes, so then he's happy. So he says, you know, how come overnight? It's so close by. Yeah, it's close by. We did it. Congratulations. He gets down. And then as he enters the mainland, he sees people. Now to his surprise, many of them are dressed in the Indian style of dressing. So he gets a doubt. Is this Dubai? He goes and asks them, what place is this? They say Ali Bagh. Ali Bagh is just 2 hours away from Bombay. So the point is, he wanted to go somewhere. He sat in that boat, but he did not reach the place where he wanted to go. He was cheated. Similarly, sometimes we are reading all these books not to become proud. We don't want to go from one point of ignorance to another variety of ignorance and think, we had a journey. Yes, it was a journey, but it was not the journey that was meant for. The original journey by reading these books and sitting in the boat of transcendental knowledge is to escape nishans. Tamasoma jyotir gamaya. We have to go to transcendentalism. So the first entry point at the gate of Vaikuntha is that we should always be grateful, and somebody who is grateful can never become proud. But here are these Vedic scholars who feel, I am doing the Chaturmas, so I am proud, I am greater than others. These people, you know, they feast. One time His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was speaking on the Nirjala Ekadashi day. And he was saying, if it is possible for us, we should do Nirjala Ekadashi. But even if somebody is not able to do Nirjala Ekadashi, let him eat prasad as per the demands of his body. And fast for the ego, although he is feasting for the body. But sometimes somebody is fasting for the body, but inside he is feasting for the ego. Look how great I am. I am doing Nirjala. And these fallen devotees, they have to eat prasad 3 times a day. So spiritual life has different rules. And ordinary life has different rules. What is important here may not be important outside. So typically when we talk of spiritual classes, there's always a question. When there is some new devotee sitting, there's a question. Prabhu, you are talking about simplicity. You are talking about humility. But these qualities, if you take to the outside world, you'll be exploited. This is a typical question whenever we talk about humility, whenever we talk about simplicity. This is a question that comes in a sadhaka devotee's heart. How can we deal with the reality of this world? Yes, how to deal with the reality of this world is a discussion by itself. How to be true to the ideals inside and yet deal in a practical way with the situation outside. That's a discussion. But just because there is a struggle for me to live by my principles told by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita and repeated by the spiritual master again and again, does not mean I compromise on them. Does not mean I justify, see, all these principles are good in the class, but while living those principles are not good. No, in one sense we are not having sufficient faith in the practical instructions of the spiritual master. So the challenge is ours, teachers are available, we have to find the time. How to live by these principles, how to be humble while sitting in the boat of knowledge and actually enter the spiritual world. What is the one shloka in the Bhagavad Gita which talks about how to receive knowledge from somebody senior, from your spiritual master? tad vidhi pranipatena prani prashnena sevaya. So three things are mentioned. Pranipat, which is directly dealing with the ego. Even before opening your mouth, first go and sit there in humility. Maybe he has something for me to learn. Give him that benefit of doubt. Maybe he knows one thing more than me, which can benefit me. I have a chance to learn something. And then comes pariprashna. So it's very interesting how pranipat is purification for the ego, pariprashna is the purification for the intelligence, and then seva is purification for the body. So how Krishna is mentioning, if you want transcendental knowledge from your guru, you need purification at three levels. Your body also should be purified. Now don't engage in sukruti or dushkruti. Engage in akarma. Engage in seva to the Supreme Lord. Engage in seva to the representatives of the Supreme Lord. But before you do that, before you end up thinking, I am doing seva to the Lord, but you are doing disservice to the Lord. He is expecting something else and you are doing something else. He wants milk from you and you are just giving him water. Learn how to serve, which will need pariprashna. So that prefix pari is a very interesting prefix in Sanskrit. You know, there are these words called parivartan. Parivartan means complete change. Parichay. Parichay means complete introduction. Any other word which begins with pari? The Bhagavatam sometimes means parihasya. Parihasya means somebody is totally making fun of you. So there is hasya and then there is parihasya. Pari means complete. Parishram. Parishram already means hard work. But parishram means complete hard work. So it is mentioned pariprashna. Pariprashna means ask in detail. Don't just ask superficially to show that you are having something, a faculty to ask. Go deeper into what the spiritual master is speaking. Go see it from different angles. Try to understand what is his complete message, not just a small part of the message. So for doing seva properly, for saving yourselves from pious deeds and impious deeds, you need to have knowledge. So you need to do pariprashna. But for doing that pariprashna properly, there is another condition before that is pranipat, that humility. I don't know, you know, kindly instruct me. This humility is something that will open the via medium for transfer of knowledge from the spiritual master to all of us. How does a student learn? Because we are talking of the process of learning today. How does a student learn? The understanding in the modern world is a student learns by giving him a very nice, comfortable facility. Probably the schools today should have air-conditioned classrooms. Probably the teaching medium should not be these paper, old-styled books. We should have PPTs. We should have an LCD projector. We should have different games. Interactive learning, and there are so many theories. How should the modern day students be taught so that the learning curve is steeper? One essential thing that they forget in this whole business is the student convinced that he's a student? What if the student, when he enters the classroom, is in a mood, the teacher is senior to me in age. Also, I can see he has some white hair. I don't have white hair. Yes, probably a few years more. But as far as knowledge is concerned, everything that he is speaking, you know, the modern kids, small kids, they have these tablet phones, these big size phones. And anything that is spoken there, in one sense, is there in the books. And what is there in the books is on Google. And what is there in Google is in your pocket. So, we should not be surprised if students today don't have a learning enthusiasm, or when they come back they are bored when they return from the school. Why? Because they feel the only difference between me and the teacher is the number of years on his birth certificate, his birth date on the birth certificate. Just give me a few days. I am on Google. I have 4G, which is free nowadays. I can download all the information and I can be a matching, at least in knowledge, at least in knowing the facts and figures of this world. What about first working on the attitude of the student? Spending a good amount of time telling him, my dear student, although you have the same amount of knowledge that the teacher has, just based on the technological access that you have to knowledge, does not mean you have the same conviction, does not mean you have the same experience, does not mean you have that kind of ability to explain it to others. Try it out. In my school, on Teacher's Day, 5th of September, they used to do one thing. All the teachers would take a day off, and some of, you know, the bright students in the class would be given an opportunity to teach. That was their homage to the teachers in my school. So who was chosen? Definitely not those, who were more talkative. Those who would get more marks. Knowledgeable. So somebody who was knowledgeable was given a chance to teach physics. Somebody was given a chance to teach chemistry. They knew a lot. They used to get more marks in writing the examination. But when they were told to speak, they could not express it. Why? Knowledge is not just about the letters. Knowledge is about what is there in between the letters. How to understand what is being conveyed by the teacher. So, this Pranipat works on the attitude. And once the attitude is clear, then everything just flows smoothly into the heart of the student from the mouth of the teacher. So if that is not taken care of, then all these problems arise in the world. And that's why so many times when the spiritual master speaks, he does not speak much of facts and figures. He does not usually speak new things. But he keeps focusing, he keeps drilling. The essential thing, whether you know less or you know more, is that we remain humble, is that we keep on being in the attitude of a student. Somebody is junior in age to me, but it's possible he knows something by his experience, he knows something by his practices more than me, and I should learn from him. Since we are talking of personalities here who are very expert in Vedic knowledge, but they are proud. One typical example of this is Dashagriva, the 10-headed famous personality in Ramayana. Here is a person who has read all the Vedas, who comes in a family of very highly placed Brahmanas. But all that knowledge, all that exposure, all that Janma, Aishwarya, Shruta and Shri. Hanuman, it is described, when he saw Ravan for the first time, he appreciated Ravan. He said, he looks really great, he is knowledgeable and he is strong and stout, if only he had been a devotee. So Govind Prabhu in one class was saying how Hanuman says, he is like a huge, nice, beautiful tree, which is a very attractive tree, but he is a tree in a cremation ground. That's what Hanuman thinks. He is not a big, huge, attractive tree in some park, which is of some use. Cremation ground, inauspicious. So here is Ravan, who has all the things that we could be aspiring for, but all that has only produced pride in him. So, first time when Ravan comes in Ramayana is when Shurpanakha is insulted, her nose and ears are cut off, and one of the demons, in those 14,000 demons, his name is Mahodar. So first Khar and Dushan attack, and then 14,000 soldiers attack, and all of them are killed by Lord Ramchandra single-handedly. And one of the demons, he escapes from there to report back to his master. Ravan asks him, how did you come here if everyone else is dead? He says, actually to escape, I put a sari around me and ran away from there. Otherwise, I would have also been killed. So this Mahodar, he comes, or his Akampan, sorry, he's not Mahodar, he's Akampan. Akampan is the first demon who reports the news to Ravan. So this person, as he's reporting to Ravan, he tells him how Ram is an amazing personality. He looks ordinary, but he almost single-handedly killed the entire 14,000 soldiers. So what is Ravan's reply? Ravan is fuming with anger. Ravan says, do you know who I am? Says, I can kill the god of death. I can burn with radiance Aditya, the sun god. I can burn fire. So I can stop the wind god. Basically he is saying, this is another way of saying, I can do that which cannot be done by anybody else. Do you know whom you are talking to? You may be frightened by Ram. I am not frightened by Ram. Lot of pride. He is giving a description of what he saw, what he experienced. But then we all have more faith in pratyaksha praman than in shabda praman. And spiritual knowledge is to have more faith in shabda praman than in pratyaksha praman. So he's saying, Valmiki Muni also describes how at that point of time there were many, many scars of wounds on the entire body of Ravan, which meant he had been attacked by many, many demigods, and those wounds, after you get cut, there's some mark there. So his whole body was decorated with ornaments, but one of the features of his body, the decorations, were marks of wounds in different battles. So this Ravan, because he has killed some ordinary personalities, he has hurt the demigods, he is now thinking he can deal even with the Supreme Lord. This is called pride. And then it is mentioned, then Shurpanakha comes. And Shurpanakha has her own agenda. Shurpanakha wants Ravan to suffer at the hands of Ram. Why? Many times people feel that actually Shurpanakha wanted Ravan to benefit. But no, actually, the Ramayana mentions how the husband of Shurpanakha, his name was Vidyujjiva. This Vidyujjiva was killed by Ravan. One time they met and Vidyujjiva failed to offer some respects to Ravan. And Ravan felt, how come this person is not offering me respects? Just for this small fault, he killed his brother-in-law. So much for Ravan's love for Shurpanakha. Sometimes it is mentioned, the only reason why Ravan kidnapped Sita is because he wanted to take revenge for the injustice done to his sister. Bhai behen ka prem hai yad. But actually, if it was so, he would not have killed and made her a widow. So there is no love. Where, how can there be love for sister, brother, ministers, sons? Everyone is supposed to be burnt in the fire, the yajna of my selfish passions. Because I want to enjoy somebody, everyone, one of them is put into an ahuti, like an ahuti into the fire. First his sons die, his ministers die, his brother dies. The last person to die in the battle of Ramayana is Ravan himself, when everyone else has already been offered. So this is the pride of a person. All of you are meant for me. All of you are meant to serve my purpose. So neither the brother had love for the sister, neither the sister had love for the brother. The sister was thinking, he killed my husband, I'll make sure that he is killed. Because she knows what happened there. She saw it practically. So she incites lust. She knows that's his weakness. He loves himself. So anything that gives pleasure to himself is something that he likes very much. That is the language that he speaks. So she describes the beauty of Sita Devi. And there is a hint in one of the shlokas that Shurpanakha speaks. She says, Manmathasya. So who is Manmath? Manmath is Cupid. He churns the mind. Manmath. So she mentions, Manmathasya Sharanam Chatvam Vidheyo Bhavishyasi. She says, actually, Ravan, when you see Sita, you will become a victim. You will be conquered by the arrows of Cupid. So here is the hint. Ravan, you think you are the conqueror? Just because you know a lot, unfortunately, all your knowledge has only produced pride, has only created possessiveness in you, and you will be the victim of your own lust. Shurpanakha is predicting much before the war, you will be killed by your own lust. Actually, when Ravan dies and his dead body is there in front of him, Mandodari and all his queens come, they're crying. But at one point of time, Mandodari says, you think, Ravan, and people think that you were shot by the arrows of Ramchandra, but you were not killed by the arrows of Ramchandra. Actually, you drowned in the ocean of tears of all those whom you made them cry. These are just nimitta. The arrows of Lord Ramchandra are just some visible reason. The actual reason is so many people. Ravan actually means that person who made others cry. In one shloka it comes, Ravano loka Ravanam. That he is a person who makes other people cry. Those tears actually drowned you. So here is one person who has tremendous knowledge, but he is a servant of lust. Knowledge should have uplifted him, especially Vedic knowledge, should have uplifted him to transcendental life, free from attachments to body and mind. But here is a person, more he knew, more he tried to control people and made them serve his passions. We'll contrast him with Hanuman. Hanuman is another prominent personality in Ramayana. One prominent is Ravan, and the other person who is prominent on the other side is Hanuman. Most of the big things that were achieved for Lord Ramchandra were done by Hanumanji. So, is a typical Vanar. It is mentioned when Hanumanji is moving around in Lanka trying to search for Mother Sita, at one point of time, you know, he enters the palace and he moves around to different parts of the palaces, and everywhere he sees the different women that are captured by Ravan. And as he's going on, he comes across different sites which are not exactly good to behold for somebody in the brahmacharya. So Hanuman is unmarried. Hanuman is a servant of God. He is not a servant of his senses. Somebody who is a servant of his senses cannot serve God. And somebody who is a servant of God need not serve his senses, although they demand a lot of service from him. So he sees all that, but it does not affect him. And then as he goes on ahead, he sees a very beautiful, chaste looking lady. She is not in Rajo or Tamo like the other ladies. She looks sattvic. She looks like coming from a good family. And for a moment, Hanuman, in his desperation, he thinks that probably this is Mother Sita. And as he feels like that, the Ramayana describes, how does a monkey express happiness? You know, it is mentioned in the Ramayana, Valmiki Rishi is mentioning, he kisses his own tail. That is, he starts jumping, he feels, mission accomplished, I found Mother Sita. Actually, it is Mandodari, it's not Sita. But for a moment, he thinks like that. So now there is hope for Lord Ramchandra. He's almost dying there. So he kisses his own tail, he starts jumping up and down like a typical vanar. So this vanar, in just a few moments back, when he was looking at all those half-dressed, beautiful girls, those were captured by Lord by Ravan from all over the universe, actually, it did not produce any lust in him. What is the typical quality of a vanar or a monkey? Prabhupada many times would describe. His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, sometimes in his classes, he describes how in Vrindavan, when he was living as a sadhu, he has observed the life of monkeys from close by. Many monkeys in Vrindavan. One thing about monkeys is, they are very chanchal, they are very fickle-minded, they can't sit in one place, and they have a lot of lusty activities. These are the two qualities about monkeys that are famous. So here is, it's very interesting how Lord Ramchandra, when he wants to teach us, Lord Ramchandra is somebody who teaches by his own example. Lord Krishna does not teach by his example, Lord Krishna teaches by his words. So Lord Ramchandra is Maryada Purushottam. He teaches by his actions. His devotees also are very interesting. They also teach by their actions. So he, Hanuman, is a servant of God, but in a vanara species. And vanara species is famous for something. And what about Hanuman? Very interestingly, Hanuman, although he does not have all that amazing knowledge that Ravan has, in a vanar body, he is completely sense-controlled. Sugriv, when he was united with his wife by Lord Ramchandra, what happened? He forgot everything. 4 months he just enjoyed with his wife. When Vali wanted to hurt Sugriv, what did he do? He came, he bashed Sugriv, and he captured his wife and took him. Is there no other way to show your superiority to your brother? The only way Vali thought, I will show my superiority to my brother, is capturing his wife and taking her along. So these are the vanaras, very much into bodily sensual enjoyment. Hanuman is also one of the same species, but interestingly, he is the world famous brahmachari. He's not affected. Why is he not affected? Because he may have less of knowledge, but he has a lot of pranipat, he has a lot of humility. And he wants to serve his master, Ramchandra. So this is a very interesting contrast. Another person that came to my mind when we are discussing about the servants of God is Arjun. Throughout the scriptures, many times we hear how X person, this person, some human beings, sometimes they saw some apsaras and they got attracted to the apsaras. Or Pururava, he got attracted to Urvashi, like that. So many references where an ordinary human being got attracted to apsaras. I have never come across, you can correct me, of an apsara getting attracted to a human being. An apsara getting attracted to a human being, Arjun is that one rare person who did not develop attraction for Urvashi, but Urvashi developed attraction for him. And Urvashi comes and tells him, you are a handsome man, I am a beautiful girl, can we spend some time together? But Arjun says, no, because I am not here for all this, and actually you are my mother. I never ever could even think of something like that. And this is something that Urvashi has never heard. A beautiful woman like me is sought after. People are dying to just to catch a glimpse of me. And here you are. I am proposing something to you. And you are denying that. It is such a big, unthinkable concept for somebody like Urvashi. She curses him to become a eunuch. So here is Ravan, who is knowledgeable but servant of lust. And here is Arjun and Hanuman, who are servants of God. And they have totally conquered that which conquers everyone, just based on their service to the Supreme Lord. And just based on having that duty attitude. Right now, I have not come here to think about myself. Right now, I have not come here to engage everyone in my service. Actually, right now, I have come here to serve Krishna. Right now, I have come here to serve Lord Ramchandra by finding Mother Sita. So these are some examples in our scriptures of knowledgeable people who were affected by pride, and some examples of devotees so knowledgeable. At least that is not their primary qualification, but service attitude. And they could do something that which could not be done by anybody else. Even in Krishna Leela, there is one typical story that could be mentioned in today's context of people being attracted to Vedic rituals, advanced in knowledge, but could not actually understand the essence of life. They could not sit in the boat of knowledge and Vrijinam Santarishasi. They could not cross over material existence. In the chapter entitled Brahmana's Wives Blessed, it is mentioned one day Krishna and Balaram and their friends, they are in the forest of Vrindavan, and Krishna becomes hungry. So Krishna requests his friends, just nearby there are some Vedic Brahmanas doing some yajnas. So they are not aborigines, they are not tribals, they are not Danavas, they are not demigods, they are people well versed in Vedic literature, and they are doing Vedic yajnas. Can you go and request them if they can give me some food, because I am hungry? And all those gopas, they go to those Brahmanas, they are doing some yajnas, they are preparing actually, the yajna has not yet started. And the friends of the Supreme Lord, they go meekly. They fold their hands. They are servants of Krishna. They are very much humble. Say, my dear Brahmanas, we are friends of Krishna. He is hungry. Would you kindly give us some food? Not for us, for Krishna. Balaram has sent us. So what is the reply? The reply of these Brahmanas is silence. When the friends of Krishna beseech them, actually you know what the words they use? They say, hey, Bhumi Deva. Kuch dev hai, jo swarg lok mein rehte hai, aur wahi dev, jab dharti pe aate hai, to brahmano ke roop mein aate hai. Aap devta hai, aap humko margadarshan karne wale hai, aap humko sikhane wale hai. Hey, Bhumi Deva. Just see the respect that they are ready to offer to these brahmanas. And what is the reply of the brahmanas? You are not fit even to receive a reply. So, if somebody asks you something and you reject it, it is kind of an insult. But it's not such an insult. Why? Because at least you acknowledge that person's presence. Think about it. I'm here doing some preparation for a yajna, and some boys come and say, can we get some food to eat? And I don't even look there. Shrunuvan api na shushru. Just like we have a phrase, Pashyan api na pashyati. They saw but they did not see. It is mentioned these Vedic Brahmanas, they heard but they did not hear. They neglected. You boys are not fit even to give a reply. I don't even have a few moments to say graciously, sorry, we are doing a yajna. This yajna is meant for the pleasure of Vishnu. I don't know that Krishna is the same Vishnu, so I can't give it to you. Do one thing, come back after some time. After this yajna is completed, probably we can give you some prasad and you will also benefit. Something from the Vedas. Did the Vedas ever mention to not reply? Did the Vedas ever mention if anybody comes to you, totally neglect them? No. But this is their interpretation. We are so great. We know the Vedas. We know. We converse in Sanskrit language. We know so much that you ordinary cowherd boys don't know. Don't even expect a reply from us. We are so great. So these boys with a humble mood, they don't insult, they don't shout at them, how dare you not even reply. Alright, what to do? They are servants of Krishna. They can beg, we can beg, but we may be insulted. What to do? we just come back to our master. Because we did not go there on our mission, we went there on a master's mission. The friends of Krishna did not go to ask for themselves, the friends of Krishna went to ask for Krishna. So in our service sometimes when we are insulted, we have to ask this question, why are we feeling insulted? We are feeling insulted because we were insulted. Or we were sent by somebody, so we report that to somebody, that we, when we went there, we faced harsh words. We were insulted. And let the person who sent us on that mission decide what to do, instead of we taking the call of how to reply and how to give a fitting reply. So the cowherd boyfriends go back to Krishna and Krishna says, okay, forget it. I'm happy that you did not counter curse them or shout at them or spoil their yajna. You went, you asked, you did not receive a reply, you came back. I'll tell you the solution. The yajna patnis, the brahmana's patnis, they are not well versed in knowledge. They did not go to any gurukul. They have some knowledge. When their husbands talk, some of that knowledge falls on their ears. But you know what? These yajna patnis, because they have little knowledge and they are practicing, because they are serving their husbands in preparation of the sacrifices, the service has produced realizations in them. So knowledge when applied gives realizations. So the yajna patnis, they are engaged in service and they have little knowledge. Although they don't have systematic knowledge as is taught in a gurukul. You go and ask them, they will give you. The assurance that the yajna patnis will give you food is not when it actually happens. It is already given by Krishna. Krishna has so much faith on the yajna patnis. Why? They are having knowledge and they are living by that knowledge. Krishna assures them, this time there will not be silence, there will not be rejection, your wish will be fulfilled. And that's what happens. They actually go there, they ask the yajna patnis feel this is the success of our life, that Krishna is asking something, and they just shower whatever they have. Actually all that food items as bhoga was supposed to go to the place where the yajna was being performed. And all that is diverted by the yajna patnis to Krishna. They are willing to undergo that threat. Their husbands will become angry on them. But they say it's okay. So this is something where we see how somebody who is living by knowledge is favored by Krishna. Although somebody who has a lot of knowledge and is not living by knowledge is not favored by the Supreme Lord. One point that was mentioned here was the conditioned souls. I'll just read one or two lines, one or two more minutes. Thus, those who are carried away by the heavenly phantasmagoria offered in the Karmakanda section of the Vedas gradually develop an atheistic mentality. I just thought we should speak a few lines on this. How can those who are reading the Vedas, engaged in Karmakanda sacrifices, develop an atheistic mentality? Why would they become atheists? Because atheism is not, we define atheism as not accepting the existence of God. Those are atheists. So what does it mean to not accept the existence of God? One way to say there is no God is, there is no God. Another way to say that God does not exist is, I am God. And what is the quality of God? God is enjoyer. So any one of us who is practicing an enjoying mentality, this, he, she, they, all of this is meant for my enjoyment. That is a way in which the commentators on this shloka are defining atheism. Such people are very expert in Vedic scripture. They have a lot of Vedic knowledge. They don't write books denying the existence of God. They are living by that principles which deny the existence of God. When any person accepts the existence of God, what is he expected to do? Serve him. Love him. At least thank him for what we have received from God. But somebody who's moving around in the world in such a way that everyone and everything is meant for my happiness, he is like a competitor to God. Srila Prabhupada in the beginning days would sometimes speak in his classes that so many people are envious of Krishna. So people in the Western countries, they would think, envious of Krishna? Hardly anybody knows Krishna. In the Western countries, nobody knows who is Krishna. So Prabhupada is saying, all of us are envious of Krishna and we don't even know who is Krishna. How can we be envious of somebody whom we don't even know? So Prabhupada is not talking that we can pinpoint, you know, Krishna is the Supreme Lord and I am envious of Krishna. He's saying we are envious of Krishna in the sense we want the resources of Krishna to be not used in the service of Krishna, to be used in our service. That is how we are atheists. So all of us, to the extent to which we have that mood, you know, we have to struggle with this. So there's a Ravana within. There's an atheist within. There's a scholarly atheist within. And also there is a gift of Arjuna mentality given to us by our spiritual master. He is giving us a gift that tadviddhi pranipatena. Be humble, learn. And this is something that we can learn from Srila Narottam Das Thakur, whose disappearance day is today. Very knowledgeable person, born in an aristocratic family, almost like a prince. He is the person whom Lord Chaitanya predicted when he was there. He said, Narottam, Narottam, one day a special personality will come who will spread the teachings all over. And after Lord Chaitanya, after the six Goswamis, it is Narottam Das Thakur who actually revolutionized the spreading of Gaudiya philosophy. But this Narottam Das Thakur, when he went to Vrindavan, he saw Loknath Goswami as a humble Vaishnav. And he would go regularly to Loknath Goswami and say, my dear Loknath Goswami, you are a dear devotee of God. Can you become my guru? Can I get some instructions from you? And Loknath Goswami had already heard how Narottam Das Thakur's appearance had been predicted by Lord Chaitanya. He had deposited prema, love of Godhead, in Padma River for the future for Narottam Das Thakur. Imagine somebody who is such a dear associate of Lord Chaitanya. So Loknath Goswami in his humility would reply, you Narottam are a personal associate of Lord Chaitanya who was predicted by Lord Chaitanya. He would appear. How can I, a humble person, I don't know much, how can I initiate somebody who is ordained to spread love of Godhead throughout the world? This would be not a fitting, but he would say, I need practical teachings to live by what I know. So you can be my practical guide, you can be my spiritual master. But Loknath Goswami had taken a vow to never ever have a disciple. He is thinking, I can't. This is against the principle of humility. So it would regularly happen. Narottam Das Thakur would come to him. Loknath Goswami would deny. So then what to do? So Narottam Das Thakur thought, Loknath Goswami probably thinks I am not serious. I have to actually show I intend it. So in those days, Vrindavan was like a small village. And Loknath Goswami in the early morning hours would go at some place to do his morning duties. Narottam would wake up even before him, somewhere around midnight, go there and clean up that whole place so that today when Loknath Goswami comes, it is clean. It's pleasant. He would also sprinkle some water there to make it nice. So one time it happened, Loknath Goswami thought, probably it's a coincidence, it happened repeatedly. Loknath Goswami was thinking, who is doing this? And one day, just to find out, he spied on Narottam Das Thakur and he found out this prince from Bengal is doing the most unthinkable task of cleaning the remnants of the morning duties of that person whom he thinks should be spiritual master. He wanted to show his pranipat even before he asked the first pariprashna. And that's how Loknath Goswami was convinced. And in that morning, it is also mentioned by some that Lord Chaitanya appeared in the dream of, in the vision of Loknath Goswami and told him, I had told you to initiate Narottam Das Thakur. Why would you not initiate? And that day, there's a meeting. Narottam Das Thakur, in a very sweet way, tells him, when a young girl has decided for somebody to become a husband, why would the husband deny him? She's dependent on that husband. So he would always say that the Supreme Lord has already given you what we are aspiring for. So how can I come in between? And Narottam Das Thakur immediately said, today the young girl, the young woman is seeking blessings of the father to allow this marriage of the young girl and the young man. So he was pointing that the Supreme Lord, Lord Chaitanya, I am praying to him that the spiritual master Loknath Goswami should shower his mercy on. Hearing these sweet words and his genuine service attitude, Loknath Goswami relented and Narottam Das Thakur was given his initiation. But he kept his vow. After Narottam Das Thakur, Loknath Goswami never gave initiation to anybody. So here is a day when we can remember great scholars like Narottam Das Thakur, Jeev Goswami, who were engaged in menial service just even before they became great scholars. And we also discussed some examples from Ravan's life and Hanuman's life, Arjun's life. we show that it's not about knowledge, it's not about, it's all about giving up, trying to give up. All this is meant for me, kind of an attitude. So thank you very much for giving me an opportunity to speak a few words from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavat Mahapurana ki jai, Anantakoti Vaishnavrinda ki jai.